As we learn the Parsha this week, Parshas B'chukosai, and B'chukosai is dedicated largely to the first part, the part which often gets the most attention in our discussion of this Parsha, is the Tochacha. It's the words of warning, promise of good things, but it's known as Tochacha. Tochacha is actually direction, rebuke, warnings, heaven forbid, of negative things that could befall the Jewish people as a result of their failure to fulfill the Torah. And there's a reason why it gets the emphasis before Shavuos, not simply because it's more dramatic than the technical laws which are taught at the end of the Parsha, and not even just because it's the first part of the Parsha, but it's specifically designed that we read this time of year before Shavuos. It's a specific point of attention. In fact, the Gemara says, and you'll see it on the sheet when it comes, that Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, who was so instrumental in establishing the way we read from the Torah, the way we learn from the Torah, Ezra established for the Jewish people that we should read the B'chukosai before Shavuos. Specifically, the portion of the Klolos, of the curses, of the, heaven forbid, of the warnings, of all kinds of things that are here in B'chukosai before Shavuos. He established we should read those before Shavuos, and we should read the same type of a parsha, which is Kisavo, before Rosh Hashanah, which is the way our calendar comes out. But realize that, you know, there were different times and different places. There was a time and a place where people didn't read the Torah according to the order of the parshas of Shavuot that we do. They would read it over 3 years. Right? It was a three-year cycle. There are non-Orthodox synagogues which do that today, but they don't do it the way Ezra did it. No. The way it was done then. The way they do it is that this week they'll read Parshas B'chukosai a third of it. Yes. And next year they'll read Parshas B'chukosai a second third of it. What they did was they started from Bereishis, and they read a third of Parshas Bereishis, and the second week they read the second third of Parshas, but they went straight. Right, this is sort of a nod to Parshas HaShavuah, but not doing the whole thing. So they did it that way. So it would turn out that it wouldn't be the Parshas HaShavuah this week of B'chukosai, but the same way before Purim, we always read Parsha Zohar, and we have certain special readings. Ezra established that before Shavuos, whether you were up to there or not, you would read B'chukosai. Before Rosh Hashanah, whether you were up to it or not, you would read the Klolos Sheba Mishnah Torah, you would read Parshas Kisavo.
Was it an added Parsha?
It was an added Parsha, or it may have been a replacement. It's not perfectly clear whether it was a second reading or whether it was a replacement reading like on Yontif. You know, if Shabbos comes out on Yontif, you replace it. But now, the way we have it engineered, it works out perfectly because we start from Simchas Torah, and it works out just right that we get up to this before Shavuos with a little, you know, double parsha engineering sometimes, but we get to it right before Shavuos and we get to the other one right before Rosh Hashanah. So there's a significance to focusing on this Tochacha before Shavuos. And the Gemara says an interesting thing about it. Why should we read this before Shavuos? Says the Gemara, in order that Tichle Shana Uklaloseha Tavo Shana Uvirchoseha. Because it's the end of the year, says the Gemara. And we want to have whatever negativity disappear with the year. Any bad thing, any klolos, any curses which were there should go out with the old year and let the new year come only with blessings. Which of course makes a lot of sense for reading it before Rosh Hashanah, but doesn't seem to make as much sense for reading it before Shavuos. So the Gemara struggles. What does that mean? Before Rosh Hashanah, I understand. But why before Shavuos? Shavuos isn't New Year's, right? Is this a new year? And the Gemara says, well, the truth is, it is a little bit of a new year. Why? Because we say, it says in the Gemara that there are a variety of New Years. There are New Years for different things. The New Year that for days of judgment for different things. And Atzeres and Shavuos is sort of the New Year for the fruits of the trees. That's the time of the springtime when the fruits of the trees come in. We're judged by Atzeres, al peiros ha'ilon, it says on Shavuos we're judged for the fruits of the trees, and therefore it's considered in that sense something of a new year. So therefore we finish it before then, which of course poses a problem, because there are a number of times of judgment during the year which could be called in that sense New Year's. It's not the same term, Rosh Hashanah, but yet we do it specifically Shavuos. So it's the new year for the fruits of the trees, so that's why we should call it a new year and say let the year end with its curses. It's a very enigmatic statement of the Gemara. So we're going to look a little bit in more detail as to perhaps some nuance to that statement, and we're going to probe in that direction. But let's take a step back from it first, before just taking the Gemara at a very simple, literal level and say, okay, so we want to get rid of the curses with the old year. We would obviously understand as well that parshios like these would say, you know, keep the Torah, with the Torah comes blessing, heaven forbid, ignoring it brings negative consequences. That's the kind of thing that you say when you're trying to strengthen undertaking. Right, you're getting somebody to do something, you're bringing something forward to somebody, you want them to know what they have riding on it. So it's understood in a certain sense that Shavuos is when we reenact the acceptance of the Torah. And when Hashem presented us the Torah for acceptance, He said, you know, you saw what I did in Mitzrayim, if you come along with me, you're going to be my people, right? This is your chance, your opportunity. Shavuos is an anniversary of that kind of an undertaking of accepting Hashem's Torah. It would make sense in anticipation of that. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. It would make sense in anticipation of that that we should have this this kind of a thing, which underscores the importance and the impact of the acceptance of that Torah. Makes a lot of sense. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, besides for the fact that technically speaking Yom Kippur is the anniversary of when we received the Torah the second time, because remember the first Luchos broke and then Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah a second time on Yom HaKippurim, it's called the day of the giving of our Torah. So that's, but it's also of course a season of undertaking things, commitment to Torah in the fullest sense. It's because the time of tshuva, the time of resolutions, that's what we're doing. And therefore, to have it, so to speak, fully informed by, you know, if you go this way, this is what defines life. If you go the other way, heaven forbid, it could be the opposite. It makes sense to be reading something which spells out to us so significantly the consequences and the seriousness of the undertaking around the time of the undertaking. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, we say, okay, we want to read the curses before the year ends. So sort of, you know, we'll talk about it. That almost sounds like a superstitious thing, you know? You know, we're gonna just quickly, you know, the year's ending, there's some things we want to like put in there, slam the door, we never want to see you again, you know? So if we're going to have to read some curses, some negative things, we're going to do it quickly before the end of the year, close the door and finished. Now, On some level, I shouldn't feel like a superstitious thing, but it sounds very, you know, like sort of like a simple kind of thing. Let's get this out of the way. But Bechukosai is big. Bechukosai is big. It's telling you, your life depends on it. You know, we say Kriya Shema every day. The second paragraph of Kriya Shema is like a miniature Bechukosai. You know, you listen to my mitzvahs, you can have all this rain and all this plenty, all this wrong thing, I don't forbid you, ignore it. Things could dry up, you'd have to leave. It's a miniature Bechukosai. We understand, we say that every morning, every night, because if we're accepting upon ourselves all Malchus Shamayim, responsibility to God, which is what Kriya Shema is about, so you spell out with responsibility, you know, the give and take, the consequences. So it's only logical that as we view these two times before Shavuos, which is a time of undertaking, of responsibility. Now, Pesach, we got the freedom with the string attached, which we count now down, you know, 49 days till we get to Shavuos. We say, okay, but now here's the responsibility. And Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the time of re-establishing that responsibility with tshuva and recommitment. So learning these parshios before that is a part of that setup. And and it's important for us, I think, to keep that in focus. But let's now take a look. We want to take one step forward and talk a little bit about this undertaking. Again, in the way of what we've been talking about, Darkei Noam, in engaging the realities of engaging the world. And you know, for those of you who were here last week, maybe you'll find it a little bit continuous with what we talked about last week, adding to what we talked about last week. And for those of you who were not, I hope again it'll be meaningful and freestanding, you know, on its own. So the first source on your sheet, Gemara in Megillah, is the one that says this thing that Ezra established for the Jewish people. Ezra tikkun lem Yisrael shiukaren kol shabbataras kedem kedem atzeres v'shabemishna Torah kedem Rosh Hashanah. They should read this section before Shavuos and the other before Rosh Hashanah, because we want the year to end with its close. And the Gemara explained that Rosh Hashanah is also that Atzeres is also Shavuos is something of Rosh Hashanah, because on Atzeres we're judged al peres o'ilah. Now, to understand this, why should it be so significant? I would like to take you to another passage in the Gemara where this notion is actually established about when we're judged for what. And the Gemara says, as a comment on that Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, the second source on your sheet, Rosh Hashanah Daf Tezayin, Tanya Om Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, Mipnei Ma Amra Torah Haviu Omer BePesach. Why did the Torah say that you should bring the Korban HaOmer, the barley offering, on Pesach? Neisha Pesach Zman Tvuahu, because Pesach is the time when the grain starts coming in. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore Hashem instructed, Haviu Lefanai Omer BePesach, bring before me a measure of barley on Pesach, so that it will bring blessing to the grain that's in the field. We understand that when we give some of what we have to Hashem, that brings bracha on everything in that category that we have. So if it's the time when the grain is sort of at a critical juncture as to how well it's going to do, Hashem says, take some of that grain, bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, it will link it to the source of blessing, and it will be that much more prosperous, that much more successful. Great, that makes sense. And why did it say that you should bring the two loaves of bread on Shavuos? Says the Gemara, surprisingly, because Shavuos is the time for the fruits of the trees. Bring before me two loaves of bread on Shavuos, k'day she'yisborchu lam peres ha'ilan, so that the fruits of the trees will be blessed.
Yes, so how come?
What has bread got to do with fruits of the trees, right? Trouble, right? The Gemara is going to go on, include here, pour water on the Mizbeach on Sukkos, because Sukkos is the beginning of the rainy season. You bring water on the Mizbeach, you'll get more water, you get more rain from the heavens. Right?
But because of the wheat.
Okay, so is wheat a fruit of the tree?
No, but it's from the field.
It's from the field, but it would seem from the field it should fit with the barley on Pesach. And yet we count it over here. So it's a problem, huh?
So you had one shear that I, during the Omer, because I'm not sure, I'm very clumsy explaining it. It was 2 years ago, but
I'm impressed that you even remember.
You said it because bread is not just, first it is of course the fact that we went up, you know.
You know what, maybe what I'm saying here will remind you a little bit, this piece.
Yeah.
Let's look at what Rashi explains.
Okay.
Rashi, right below it, says, Shtei halechem, yiratu al peres ha'ilam. They will be good for the fruits of the trees. Why? It's bread. So Rashi has two interpretations. The first interpretation is you know, takes a little curve, but relatively straightforward. Why? Shein matirin lahavi bikurim. We talked a little bit about it last week. Shavuos is called the festival of bikurim, of the first fruits. There's a mitzvah of bikurim, which you bring from the seven species, which five of which are fruits, you know, besides for wheat and barley. And it's only once Shavuos comes, and you first bring the two loaves of bread of the Shtei HaLechem, that people are then able to bring their fruits. So if the idea here, which the Gemara is saying is, well, if you bring something of this to the Beis HaMikdash, it will bring blessing on the rest of it, so then let's get the fruits into the Beis HaMikdash. How do you get fruits into the Beis HaMikdash? You get it in through Bikurim. That's the only fruits that you offer in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Bikurim can come once the Shtei HaLechem is brought. So it's not that the Shtei HaLechem directly brings the fruit and the blessings of the fruit, but the Shtei HaLechem allows you to subsequently bring the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, and those first fruits will then stimulate bracha on all of the fruits. That's the first explanation of Rashi, because Ein Mevirim Bikurim Kaim La'aseres D'chsiv Bikurei Ktzir Chitim. That's his first interpretation. But then he says, Ani Shamati, I heard. This is not his own interpretation, but one that he received from someone else. And it's a more intricate interpretation. Rabbi Yehuda Letame. This passage is Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Akiva. So he says Rabbi Yehuda is consistent. To Ha'azla command Omar B'Sanhedrin Eich Sha'achal Adam Arishayin Chita Haisa. Because Rabbi Yehuda's position was consistent with the one who said in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that the tree of knowledge described in Bereishis was actually wheat. So that first forbidden fruit of the tree was actually chita, was wheat. So you can refer to wheat as fruit.
Would you go back 30 seconds and repeat that?
In order, the problem is, why does bringing the bread from the wheat stimulate anything for the fruits of the trees? It's two different things. The bread or the wheat would seem to belong with the barley on Pesach. This explains Rashi, because there's an opinion held by this very same Rabbi Yehuda that says that in the tree of the Gan Eden, the tree of knowledge, was actually wheat. And therefore, there you find it as fruits of the trees. So therefore, it really is fruits of the trees, and it therefore could be considered in that category to do it here as well. And in a minute we'll look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin briefly, but that's the second interpretation of Rashi, which is, you know, very interesting. So we have such a thing, it was, but we still don't really sort of see it as a fruit of a tree yet.
What about what is often compared to eights?
Man is compared to eights, and So
the Shtei HaLechem is the product of the eighth, of man. Like, we're bringing the first product.
Okay, and that's interesting.
Because Hashem took us out of his shrine in order to give us the Torah, in order to reach our potential. We would have to, like, the Torah is what brings us to our fruit.
So that's the pre-hides. Okay.
Okay. And we reach our potential with the bread.
It's a nice pshatim. They're a little homiletic. You should maybe take my place over here. that's a little good. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. So this is the second interpretation, Rashi, and that's really the one that I want to try to focus on. You know, try to derive some direction on, so we'll be able to see this a little bit better, and understand why this becomes significant. Because you understand, once you paint it this way, once Rashi gives us this little clue, you know, when you get to the tree of knowledge, you know you're getting into serious territory. And that's like the original thing. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're talking about Shavuos, where Shavuos is, and the Jewish people stood at Har Sinai and were being restored to the kind of state that it was like before we ate from the Eitz HaDaas, before we ate from the tree of knowledge. So when you start seeing these associations drawn, that the Shtei HaLechem is really an offering like of the wheat of the tree of knowledge, you know, to Hashem, you know, something of reverting that. Just like last week, we learned that, you know, Cain and Hevel sinned, and 50 days they brought an offering 50 days after creation. Those you remember, and now we bring this korban on Shavuos to correct it, to sort of do Cain's korban right, because standing on Shavuos, standing at Har Sinai, it's big, right? It's trying to make the world right again. So when you have this kind of a clue, it's not just a clever sort of like chap. Oh, okay, fruits of the trees, and once upon a time this was the fruit of a tree in Gan Eden, and therefore, you know, we sort of found a way to kvetch it in, you know, to squeeze it in to make it connect. No, we're calling upon that original story where wheat was what it was supposed to be, you know, in that sense. And here we are. We're bringing it in that mode, in that framework, and bringing us back to the world of blessing and the fruits of the trees. So that's why there's something very rich in this interpretation, in this interpretation of Rashi, when we say it's the beginning of the new year because it's the new year for fruits, right? You know, with this, all it's going to start to loom larger. And that's what I want to explore, the significance of this, and hopefully gain some understanding practically for ourselves. The Gemara that Rashi references, it's a very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin. The Gemara says, "Vayochal Noach Isha Adama Vayita Kerem." Noach, the man of the earth, began and he planted a vineyard. Amar Rav Chizda, Amar Rav Ukva, Va'amilo Amar Ukva, Amar Rav Zakai. Amar Lo Yakodesh Baruch Hu LeNoach. Hashem said to Noach, "Noach, Lo Hayolchalum Miyadam Arishayin. Shouldn't you have learned from Adam? Shelo Goram Lo Elo Yayin." You know, Adam Arishon, he started with wine, and look what happened to him. Right? He was the original man, he partook of wine, and he fell. Why? Because this opinion, continues the Gemara, is Kiman Amar Eisa Ilan Sheachol Mimenu Adam Arishon Gefen Haya. He held that the Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge, was actually a vine, a grapevine. And he partook of that. The Tanya, as Rabbi Meir said, Oso Ilan Sheachal Adam Rishon Mimenu Gefen Haya She'en Lecha Davar Shemevi Yilola LaAdam Elo Yayin. And that really doesn't come as a big surprise. Why? Because he says, what makes people cry, scream? What, you know, spirits, right, cause all kinds of problems. So therefore, he understood that that's what it was. And it's really neat, right? Because then Hashem destroys the world. There's one man again, sort of. You know, the man, Noach, is like Adam HaRishon. Right? He also fails. He also sins, and he sins by the grapevine. He sinned by the grapevine. He sinned by the grapevine. Here it's named. Here it's not named. But that's one opinion, that the tree of knowledge was a grapevine. Yeah?
There's just one way to connect the two of them. I heard one time that the reason why people, when they have schnapps, they say l'chaim, because the original sin was with the
correct
wheat.
Right.
So he could have become
was with the wine.
Drunk,
yeah,
by drinking fermented wheat, which is alcohol.
You mean l'chaim on schnapps, as
yeah,
opposed
yeah,
to that? Okay.
Schnapps, yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
And it goes even back to Rabbi Akiva when they would drink. So when he says that Adam was drunk, he could have actually
okay.
Wheat.
Okay, which is what...
okay,
good. Good, very good. Rav Yehuda Aymer Chita Hayer. Rav Yehuda says it was wheat. And he says, She'en ha'yedeh atinak yodeh likro abba ve'ima achiyitam tamdoga. He says, a child starts to be able to demonstrate intelligence and to be able to speak around the time that it could start eating food also. In other words, there's a certain development. We're able to start eating grain. So he says, you see that somehow wheat is associated with the entry of das, of knowledge, and this was a tree of knowledge. So you have to have a certain degree. The child has to beginning to show some levels of cognitive development to be able to do this, and therefore that's the link, and that teaches you what this was. And Rav Nechemia, third interpretation, was that it was a te'ena, that it was a fig. And he gets it from a very logical place, because he says, what did they do after they sinned? They cover themselves with a fig leaf. So he says, "Bedavar shekilkelu ba'niskenu," right? With ba'niskenu, what they made a mistake with, what they messed up with, they used to then turn around and fix themselves up. Now you notice none of these opinions are an apple, right? But I don't think the apple is a joke. It's not one of the opinions in the Gemara. But Chazal refer, and we even have it reflected in the Zmiros on Shabbos. So people say the Aramaic, the Askinu Sudasa. Gan Eden was known as the Chakal Tapuchin Kadishin, as the apple orchard, as the holy apple orchard. Right? When Yaakov Avinu came in with the clothes of Esav from Gan, you know, he smelled with him the smell of the rich apples. So it's not found here in this passage in the Gemara where it has three opinions, but you know there are different opinions in different places. Whatever it is, we have this opinion. Rabbi Yehuda, the same Rabbi Yehuda who says it was wheat. And that same Rabbi Yehuda sees in the two loaves of wheat bread of Shavuos a blessing coming to the fruits of the trees. So that's pretty, you know, it's a pretty neat and nice connection. Okay. So how can we understand it and develop it a little bit more? So I want you to skip the next source for now and look at Bereishis Perek Gimel. And in order to appreciate a little bit of the transformation, the Gemara, this section, this passage, comes from after Adam and Chava ate from the tree of knowledge, after they sinned. And the pasuk there says, Hashem turned to each participant of the sin and responded to them and gave them, quote unquote, a klola, a curse of some sort, changing their situation to make it in significant ways more difficult. First he turned to the snake. We don't include that here. Ela Isha Amar, to the woman he said, Harbeh arbeh itzvonech veheronech. He said, I will seriously increase your pain associated with your pregnancy. Be'etzef tel dibonim, with difficulty you will give birth to children, and you will yearn more for your husband than he will control, in a sense, because the woman gets wrapped up, right, childbirth, as Chazal described it, before these words were leveled at Chava, it was sort of like an instantaneous kind of a thing. The Gemara describes it as two people went into the bed and three people walked out. Right? So that means no carrying around the baby for 9 months where, you know, can I go to work today? Can't I go to work today? Am I feeling up to it? Am I not feeling up to it? No carrying around the baby for 2 years afterwards. Right? So if that's the case, you know, if it's two go into the bed and three come out, so the woman is as unlimited by being a mother as the man is by being a father, right? The man always just, you know, gets up and walks away, right? The woman is left holding the baby, right? That's the way it works. So therefore, you understand, I mean, just simple shot in the pasuk, v'alicheich chukasech, when you have now two partners and one of them is left taking care of the child, so then she becomes more dependent on her partner, on her husband, because she, there's certain things which he just can't do, which therefore he's going to have to provide. Chukasech is yearning and dependence. Yes. Now again, it has yearning and dependence. Now that can have emotional elements to it too. But there's a simple pshat here, which is even just the fact that she is limited and therefore requires the help of somebody else in certain ways. Ula adam amar, and to man he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree that I told you not to, the earth is cursed for you, on your regard to you. And it uses the same word, key word. It said by the woman, you will work hard to produce children. Well, it tells the man, you're also going to work hard. And you're going to work hard to produce things from the ground. And he goes on, the kos v'dardot hatzmiachach, it will produce thorns and thistles. You're going to struggle. It's not going to always produce what you want, where you want, as easily as you would want. V'yachalta es eitz v'asada, you're going to eat the grasses that grow from the field. B'zeas hapecha toch alechem, by the sweat of your brow you will eat bread, until you go back to the ground that you came from. Ki'ofarata ve'lofartash. So what's the common denominator of what's leveled here at woman and at man? Is that suddenly both of us were given hard jobs to do things that evidently earlier came easy. Whether this, you know, fantastic picture of childbirth which we have, or some kind of an easier way where food and sustenance was provided for man easily, we'll look at it a little bit more closely, now he's got to work. So if the woman is in this, you know, classic biblical biological picture, having a significant task of producing children, you know, helping build the home, and the man has this task of going out and making a living, both of those jobs became now significant tasks that don't come easy and aren't taken for granted, and sometimes don't even come. It's not just, let's just easy street of Gan Eden anymore. And so the pasuk goes on with this and finishes the curse of Adam. That's verse 19, and verse 20, out of the blue comes something else. The verse says, "Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava," and man called the name of his wife Chava. Why? Ki hi isa em kol chai, because she was the mother of all living things. Now, what was her name before? She had a name before. It says that she's Isha. Lazos yikore Isha. Kimei ish lukachasai. She'll be called Isha, woman, because she came from the man. Now, she's called Chava because she's a source of life. Chava is, again, like Chaya. She's Ein Kol Chai. She's a source of life. Why did he give her a new name now? Why did he change the name? So, anybody want to try? Right. If mothering is two people go in and three people come out, right? So it's not. You know, sometimes people say, "So what do you do?" Right? So somebody might say, "Well, if someone is blessed with children, they might say, I'm a full time mother." Right? How many times do you hear somebody say, "I'm a full time father"? Mm-hmm. Right? Are you such a thing? Right? What? Yeah. Right? Even if he is, exactly right. Very good. Even if he is, he calls himself a mother. Right? not a father, but that's what he says. He's also a full time mom, Mr. Mom. That's a definition, because it's not something casual. When Hashem made it that in order to do this, it's a preoccupation and a constant involvement. It's not something which would come casually. So now this becomes her name. And yes, as you say, to a degree, you're going to be defined by that which you toil in. Right? People go and say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Like, not what do you want to do when you grow up, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a, whatever it is, a fireman, an accountant. You describe it by Zeas Apecha Teich Alechem. What are you going to do for Zeas Apecha Teich Alechem? Right, so if you're going to be cutesy, right, you're going to answer and you're going to say, "Well, I want to be a nice person, I want to be a this, I want to," you know, and it's not, but when people ask that question, they ask it, but what are you going to do for a living? What's going to be your sweat of your brow that you're going to produce something from the ground? Because, in a sense, it's both a preoccupation of your time, and therefore you would say, "Okay, this is going to take a lot of my time, let me say what it's going to be." But it also becomes a big part of the persona. Who are you? You are what you invest a tremendous amount of effort into. And I want to bring you a startling illustration of this. Okay, this is going to sound painful, and it is. It is going to sound painful. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, in this section of Maseches Shabbos, it's dealing with issues around childbirth, bris, etc. So the Gemara and talks about different things that can be done on Shabbos, can't be done on Shabbos. Rav Shimon Gamliel said, "Merachmin hayinu al behemat ha'ira b'yamtiv." He says we would be merachim. What does it mean to be merachim? Would usually mean we would have mercy, we would have compassion. Here it seems to even mean we would generate compassion on a behemoth Torah, on kosher animals, on yantiv. Hechiyavid, what does that mean? Amar Abaya said, "Mevibul shel melach u'meiniach la'besoich harechem." Says what would happen would be that if an animal gave birth to a child, they would sometimes notice that the animal might forget about the child. So they would bring a bul shel melach, which is a salt cube, a clump of salt, and they would place it in the birth canal. And you know, there's an expression called rubbing salt in your wounds. That's what they did. And the animal would—I don't know what animals do when they're upset, right? But I can only imagine what we would do, right? The animal would feel tremendous, excruciating pain. And what would that accomplish? Kidei shetiskar tzara, so she'll remember the pain of childbirth, because this is like recreating it. Uterachim olav, and she'll look for the baby and take care of it. Okay? This is psychology, right? Which says that when you remind the person of, or the animal for that matter, of everything that they invested into it and all the pain they had, instead of reacting by saying, "Oh gosh, don't remind me," right? Tich leshono kolosel, we want to close the door on that. Instead, the reaction is, I put so much into this baby. Where is she? Right? Let me help her a little bit more. Let me do more. That was what they did. And that's the idea here of this new definition. If it was something casual without etzev, we wouldn't call her a mother. But now that it becomes etzev, now that it becomes pain, the effort, the pain, the difficulty becomes a new self-definition. So we understand the picture. We have Chazal drawing a little picture of what it looked like before for the woman, what it looks like now. It affects that kind of a transformation. For man, there's also a transformation. Now he starts to work to make a living, to produce the stuff from the ground. What changed? So we look again at some psukim, a little earlier in Bereshis. On the sixth day of creation, when Hashem created both animals and then human beings, it says, "Vayomer Elokim," and Hashem said as the conclusion of that day, "Hinei nasati lochem es kol esev zorea zera asher al pnei kol oretz. Behold, I have given you all the grasses that grow, that produce seeds on the face of the earth, and also all the trees that produce fruit. I've given you the things which grow from the ground, the fruit which grows from the trees, lochem yelochla, they're yours to eat." That's what it says in the first outline of creation. And for the animals, it says, for the animals, for the birds, and for all the people, there I gave them the grasses that grow on the ground. So in a sense, we have the same diet, because we both are eating herbs, the things which grow. But we have it. There's a difference. You notice the difference, right? What's the difference? The animals and people both can have things which grow from the ground, but only describes for people to have the fruits. And when we go on and we look at the picture of Adam in his ideal state, humans in their ideal state in Gan Eden, what did they have to eat? Only fruit. It doesn't describe anything about eating from grasses, just fruit. Right? As you have in the next section. In the next pasuk, Hashem put him Gan Eden, La'ovdel L'shamra, and he instructed man, Mikol Yitzagan, Achol Techel, eat from the trees of the garden, from the fruits of the trees. And when he sinned, I'll take it in quite 1 second, and when he sinned, what did Hashem say to him? Right? You look back in Bereshis Gimel, a couple of paragraphs up, verse 18, Yod Ches, the third line in that paragraph, the Kotz V'darat Tatzmiachach will produce for you thorns and thistles, V'yachalta es Esev Hasada, you'll eat the grasses of the fields. So in the beginning Hashem said, well, your menu can consist of fruits and grains or grasses. He put him in Gan Eden, he says, go for the fruits. He sins, he says, forget about the fruits, go for the grasses. And then that turns into, we take these grasses that grow from the field, but we turn it to bread. The animal might munch on it as it is, but we go and we toil in it and we turn it into bread. So what's the difference between them? Fruits of trees. You know, there's an expression which people use in the world when they talk about something which comes very easily and it's very accessible. You know what the expression is? It's called low-hanging fruit.
Right.
You know, you have somebody, oh, it's going to be easy to sell this to that person. That's low-hanging fruit. Like low-hanging fruit is you just go, you reach up, you pull it down. You don't have to bake it. You don't have to grind it. You don't have to sift it. You just make a bracha and you open wide and you take a bite. It's ready to go. Hashem put man in Gan Eden and his diet was fruit and it was ready to go. His bread was fruit. A bagel tree. Right? It was ready to go. The Gemara says, I'm saying it sort of, you know, flippantly, but the Gemara says, in the end of days back in Gan Eden, the trees will produce gluskaos. Gluskaos are rolls. In other words, what does that mean? That it's literally going to have a sesame tree and a poppy tree? That it's going to be growing around all over the place? Or the idea is that today, if you would try to just make it on fruit, you can end up with an upset stomach.
Sure.
Right? That's not the stable. But then you'll be able to sustain yourself by these things that will grow on trees. The chita, the wheat, the basic stuff, the lechem that a human being is supposed to subsist on, in Gan Eden, it was fruits of the trees. It was easy. It was ready to go. But then when we sinned, Hashem said, no, you got to have the grasses. like, in that sense, sharing it with the animals, and you have to work to produce it, to make something by the sweat of your brow that you're going to be able to produce. And by the way, even to get the grain, right? A tree, when the tree is there, every year you go back, you pull the fruits off of it. It's perennial, what's the term? Or whatever it is, or it's there all the time. Grains, you got to plow up the field and plant the seeds and start again every year, working again and again. This is the transformation. This is the picture of the curse, which Hashem said, now you're going to have to toil to be able to make it is before you would be able to eat the fruits of the trees. Now you have to produce and then process and refine and develop the things which grow from the ground. So when we have this picture, that in Gan Eden, that wheat was the fruit of the tree, it was that the basic subsistence of the person was made ready for a person by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we became defined by the work which we do in order to produce just our living, what we're able to eat. Do you still have that question? You
want it? It wasn't really a question, it was actually
covered. Okay. Okay. So this is it. But then the question is that we still have a little nagging little question here, which is, it says Hashem put man in Gan Eden, la'avda u'lishamra, to work it, to preserve it. But I thought, you know, like there was like no toil here. I thought it was supposed to be easy. Now it just has the trees. Hashem planted the trees. They're all going to work out fine. Everything is going to be great. So Chazal tell us. Chazal were troubled by this question. And they said what La'avdu L'shamra meant. It meant nothing like what you and I experience. If we put you in a garden and you have to produce La'avdu L'shamra to work and to preserve it, you're walking around with your trimmers and with your pruning shears and with your, you know, your the different things that you'll do to make it grow well and develop well. But Chazal tell us, and it's reflected in the Targum Yonason on that section, Bereishis Perek Beis, Udvar Hashem Elokim Yas Adam Mintur Pulchana Asar Disbariot Mitamon. He took him from the mountain, whatever is of service, Har Elokim, where he was created from. The Ashra Begininusa de Eden, and he put him in Gan Eden, the Mehave Pelach Be'eraisa, so that he can work in the Torah, Ulemintar Pikudahui, and to keep its commandments. La'avda Ulashamra is work, all right, but it's spiritual work. In Gan Eden, the work of man was not going to, or woman for that matter, was not going to be invested in creating things in the material world. It was going to be invested in something else, in real, high, lofty, spiritual pursuits. That was what it was going to be about. And so, we understand, taking this together, that the fruits of the trees that were Adam HaRishon's diet to begin with were a symbol of the fact that what Adam in that time, in that environment, at that stage of existence, was free to do, to work on, to dedicate his efforts towards, was not having what to eat. And woman didn't have to dedicate her efforts to the tricky and involved processes involved in what she would produce. Instead, they were there, La'avdu L'shamra. They were free to be able to focus on the service of Hashem, on mitzvahs. That was their occupation. But now that they ate from the Eitz Hadas, the choice that they made produced the results that, oh, they're going to work hard on the things that to them may just distract or take away from the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, one of the nice benefits is that, of course, man's work and toil ends up looking a lot more like a distraction than woman's work and toil. Because going out there and working in a field, you can say, I'm doing it, I can support my family, so we'll be able to do the things, that's wonderful. It's many steps removed. But if a woman is going to have the privilege to work and toil with her children, right, she doesn't have to feel like she's doing something which is so far removed from a spiritual effort and from a positive thing. Which is why, that's why, you know, the woman in her role is able to be that sort of anchor and base for the husband who can end up being all over the place. But the bottom line is still for both of them. I mean, the custom of Jewish women throughout the generations was that even though it seems that women should daven a couple of times a day, but as the Magen Avraham said, you know, it was commonly not able to be done because they couldn't. They couldn't. They would be preoccupied with whatever, you know, whatever blessings Hashem sent their way, then they couldn't. So, la'avdo l'shamra, right, to get back to that, this is what it is, and this is what we would invest in. So, let's now take a look at the first three words of this week's parsha. Im b'chukosai teilecho. The pasuk says, if you will go, you will walk in my chukim, in my laws. So Rashi makes a very famous comment. Right? The verse continues, let me just lay it out. If you will walk in my commandments, it says, so then I will bring you blessing. What will be the blessing? You're going to have rain in season. The earth will produce what it produces, its produce. The trees will produce their fruit. And you'll be, you know, you'll have such blessing. You'll be moving from one thing to the other in terms of the blessing that you have. The dayish, the threshing will move to the batzir, to the harvesting, and you'll lead to satisfaction and so on and so forth. Says Rashi, in b'chukosai teilechu, yochol zakim ha-mitzvahs. I would think this refers to doing your job, fulfilling the commandments. Kishehu aimer ves mitzvay sai tishmeru, the verse goes on and says, and observe my mitzvahs. So we already covered doing the mitzvahs. Harekim ha-mitzvahs amur. So what does it mean? Hamani mekayim in b'chukosai teilechu? Says Rashi, shetil amelim b'torah. That you will toil in the Torah. If you will toil in the Torah, then all of these things will come. The Maral just explains the language and the choice. What does that mean? So he says it's b'taras kainim shetiyu amelim b'taras hamnisha kosov halimud b'loshon halicha. It says, walk, travel. Ki halicha yesh b'taras v'amal. To travel means to pick yourself up and to go. There's difficulty in that. There's work involved in that. You're not just staying in place. Kachtiyu amelim v'yegeim. So you should be toiling and working hard in the Torah. Halicha is moving from one place to another. Amelus b'Torah means, I read this yesterday, I learned it last year, I understood it last year, but I want to understand it deeper. I want to go further. Right? That's traveling in Torah. It's never just saying, okay, I went up to here and that's enough. I'm fine, I'm okay. But the expression is, of Chazal is, amelim b'torah, toiling in Torah. Now tell me something, are you able to do that? Mm. Is someone able to do that? When a person has this thing of, you're going to work hard all the days of your life. You know, this is what happens, this is the story of life. Right? Person, they go, they wake up in the morning, they go to work, they put in a very hard day. They want to learn Torah. So at the end of the day, they'll come at night, and they're going to try to learn something. But do they have any koyach left? Do they have any strength left? So maybe they'll go, they'll be able to listen to a shiur. It requires a tremendous amount of strength, of effort, for the person to be able to do it. Okay, maybe they'll say, I can't do it at the end of the day, I'm too tired, so I'm going to get up like really early in the morning and I'm going to do it. It's nem koyaches. You know, it also takes a tremendous amount of strength. It takes a tremendous amount of strength to be able to do so. And it's hard to carve out the time and to have the energies to be able to do so, because they're so taken by other stuff, by the other things. But you understand that what happened when we ate from the Eitz Hadas was that this thing of what a person toils in and works on, which as we saw there is who they are, right? How the woman's name changes because by what she has to work on now, by what we toil in. It's such a self-definition of who we're supposed to be. Says the Pasuk, Kabbalah HaTorah doesn't just mean, you know, I'm going to make sure I'm not going to do what you told me not to do, and I am going to do what you told me to do. That means that you're an obedient observant follower of directions, but it doesn't define who you are. What's going to define who you are is what you really work on, what you really put your energies into. The bracha of Imbechukosai, the challenge of Kabbalah HaTorah, of coming back to Har Sinai, of coming back to Gan Eden, coming back to when wheat grew on trees, al peros ha'ilan, shtei alechem, when the bread grew on trees, was that your energies and your la'avda, l'shamra, your work, your toil, was reserved for bigger and better things. And when you do that, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then that all that other stuff is just going to come by the bucket load. I'll make it easier for you. Oh, this is not a promise that you won't have to do anything. In fact, the way it expresses the bracha is that you're going to hardly be finished threshing when it's going to be time to harvest the next crop. Right? Which also can have its distractive quality, like I mentioned to you last week from the Gemara, where it says you got to do this, then you got to do that. When are you going to be able to study the Torah? But in this pasuk, it's somehow talking to someone who's toiling in Torah and still being showered with this blessing, which is going to also, in a certain sense, keep him busy. But the way the pasuk describes it is, you'll be busy, and it'll be easy. You know, everything's just going to come. It's not before the sin. You know, it's not that world. But there's such a thing as sometimes when a person, they're working on something, and they have to put everything into it. And there's such a thing as they got to work on it, but there's still plenty left. There's still plenty left for something else. Our self-definition is going to be by this, by what we put our energies into. And while to some degree we're stuck with certain things, you know, because Hashem told Chava what he told Chava, and he told Adam what he told Adam. And to a certain degree we have to live with that. But we're not supposed to just embrace it that way. We're supposed to realize, you know what change that achieved? Remember, Shavuos, Matan Torah, is the day when the bread is the fruits of the trees. When bread grows on trees, which means that you can take yourself and focus your energies tremendously on something else, on higher goals, on higher purposes. Redefine ourselves that way. That's the B'chukos HaYitzeleichu Shetiu Amelim B'Taira. I want to just end sort of with two source notes and a closing comment. The source note is on the bottom of your page, and it's very appropriate for this week, both for Shavuos and for something else which is happening specifically in Baltimore. It says that Rav Nechunya ben Akana used to say a prayer when he entered the Beis Medrash. He happened to speak about it in the Parsha Shir last night. And when he left the Beis Medrash, he would say, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the privilege that I spent time in the Beis Medrash. What he said when he left the Beis Medrash, which some people still say, is traditionally said when a person finishes a Masechta, when a person makes a Siyum, you know, like they finish learning something. So we say this as part of the Siyum prayer. What is it? I thank you, Hashem, Shesam Tuchalki Miyesh Beis Medrash, Leisam Tuchalki Miyesh Veikronis. You made my portion amongst those who sit in the Beis Medrash and not amongst those who sit on the corners. Sha'ani mashkim ve'e mashkimim. I get up early, they get up early. Ani mashkim l'divrei Torah. I get up early to learn. Ve'e mashkim l'dvarim b'teilim. They get up for meaningless things. Ani amel, I toil. I work hard. Ve'e mamelim, and they toil and they work hard. Ani amel u'mekabel schar. I toil for real rewards. Ve'e mamelim ve'e mekabel schar. They toil for something which isn't really lasting. Ani rotz ve'e mrotzim. I run and they run. Ani rotz l'chay olam haba. I run to the world to come. V'heim rotz l'er shachas. And they're running into the ground. That was the prayer which he said.
Wow.
Now for us, anu amelin v'heim amelin. Everyone in life is going to toil. Everyone in life is going to work. But there's a question for what? And that's what's going to define us. And the big thank you that Rav Nechunya ben Akana said when he left the Beis Medrash was, I worked hard all right. But look what I worked on. And look what that defines me as. And that's a tremendous opportunity. Rabbi Weinreb said, I heard him once say that he once, Rav Avraham Pam, it's Tzadik Rashi of Torah Das came here once to speak at the Baltimore Siyum HaTorah. We said this tefillah, and Rabbi Weinreb picked him up from the train station and drove him. And he drove him, as you would drive from the train station, he took the JFX to Northern Parkway, and he drove him, you know, through Northern Parkway. And as he's driving, he says, that's Sinai Hospital. He says, and this is where they have the Preakness. So he said, oh, coming to a Siyum. Onu Ratzim, Vehem Ratzim. We run and they run.
That was
what he said. That was what Rav Pam said. So Inyana Diyuma, right? But the idea that you're going to be doing it, you're going to be doing it, right? In Chukosai Teleichu, right? That's the right, you know, moving, making progress, going forward. But in what? You know, the progress which I'm making, I understood the parsha this way last year, but look where I went this year. Look how I understand it differently. That's what we're running. That's what we're doing. That can all change. It's all, you know, Hashem switched switched what we ended up focusing on from the chet, and our job since then is to try to be able to get it back, to correct it again. You know, in the world of the Derech Eretz, in the world of toil, in the world of learning how to work, the Derech Eretz that we're talking about here, Shekadmo L'Torah, to be able to translate it into something else. And so, it's a second and sort of a closing comment. You know, maybe some of you have heard me repeat this before. Rav Chaim Volozhiner wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos. And in the commentary of Pirkei Avos, he comments on a Mishnah about this thing called Derech Eretz, right? Working the world. Like, understand we're talking about here, Derech Einayim, and we're talking it about the Derech Eretz of Kadmah L'Torah, the work we have to do, and, you know, navigating it in our world. But it says, famously in the Mishnah, that it's Yofet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz. Talmud Torah is good with Derech Eretz. I just translated it simply. Now, you know, in English, there's always a thing. I'm going to have this with that. What does it mean, this with that? I'm going to have some toast with jam, right? Or with, I'm going to have some bread with peanut butter, okay. Right? So sometimes, like, you'll have, like, a child, and they'll, like, take a 3-inch layer of peanut butter, and you say, "What are you having, bread with peanut butter, or are you having peanut butter with bread?" You know, like that kind of thing. One of them is the ikar, the main one, and the other one is the tuffle, is the secondary one. The question is, in Hebrew, how does it work? When we say it's good to have Talmud Torah with Derech Eretz, you know, it almost sounds like Derech Eretz is the main thing. The working is the main thing, and it's good to have a little Torah with that. You know, sprinkle it to taste. But that's, of course, astounding. How could you say such a thing? So this is a discussion, right? Tosfos Yeshanim in one place discusses it and says, well, no, in Hebrew it doesn't necessarily work that way. Torah is the main thing. The first one is the main thing. The width. The second one is the secondary thing. But Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, no. Derech Eretz is the main thing. And Torah with it. But what does that mean? It's not true. Everybody knows. Chazal tells over and over again that your main thing has to be Torah. Your main thing has to be Torah. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, he says, no, things like this. It's not talking about what's the main thing in your life. It's saying when you're doing your Derech Eretz, when you're working in the world, it says you're driving your plow, you're planting your field, you're painting the house, you're doing whatever it is. It's good that even while you're doing that, the Torah should be with you. You should still be thinking, oh, I was learning the Parsha this morning, I was learning this page of the Gemara this morning, I was just thinking about this thing of the Rambam. Even while you're doing it, sprinkle your Derech Eretz with Torah. Of course, the main thing in your day would be your Torah. The time is purely that. But even your Derech Eretz, you should sprinkle with Torah. That's what Rav Chaim Volozhiner said. And I think that when we hear that, we correctly say, that is really quaint. Mm-hmm. Why? Because, you know, Jews don't drive plows anymore. Right? What do? Right? You're going to tell a person who's a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or a semi-professional says, while you're doing your work, you should really be thinking about the taisus. That would be criminal. You can't do that. People are working, they're working with their heads. Right? They're doing that. So, you know, if you happen to be working with your hands, you're doing something. You know, based on Sunday afternoon when you're painting the shed, which nobody will mind if you don't do it exactly right. Right? So then you can think about something else. But we're like so far removed from this, and it's a big issue, because in this change of our society, you know, post-industrial revolution and everything else, and what becomes a Jewish job. So the Anu Amelim, what we can put ourselves into, is so taken up by other stuff. And sometimes it's stuff which we have to do, and sometimes it's stuff which we choose to do. Creative juices are limited. Mind space, you know, emotional mind space is limited. And it really defines us, what we invested in. Sometimes we have no choice. But we do still have a lot of room for choice. And this is part of reading this before Pesach, before Shavuos, excuse me. Shatiu Amelim B'Torah. Understand that the Matan Torah decision, yes, no, the Tree of Knowledge decision, yes, no, was not just the decision of will we observe, won't we observe. It was in what will we invest. Our energies, our emotions, what do we have to put ourselves into? And life isn't simple, and we're stuck on some things, but there's really room for us to be not just obedient or token fulfillment when it comes to the good things and the big things, but to take some of the energy of amelus, of toil, of creativity, and put it into that. It will make us into different people. That will really make us into different people.